got so loud.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertram.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Payoff pitch. Fly ball down the right field line. Can he tuck it into that corner? Yes. Rafael Devers with number 9. And the Red Sox add on the second home run tonight. That'll make it 4-2.
Red Sox seem to be trending back in the right direction, Dan. I don't know how you feel about that, but feels like they've managed to win more games than they've lost recently.
Yeah, they had like a three-week patch. It was really 500 ball, kind of after that 17-2 start, whatever you sort of didn't notice, because they're still significantly, they're playing almost 700 baseball.
I give them credit. You take care of your business at home, and then you go down there last night, and you're just sitting there, and just the dismal backdrop of what that horrific baseball stadium is.
Oh, my God.
The darkness.
Place sucks.
Nobody in the seats.
And Sandy Leon rattled one around the catwalk.
Somebody said they announced it was like 11,000 people.
They announced 10, I think, somewhere in the 10.
So what's that mean when they do that?
Yeah.
Why did they not have
6 or 7?
Why was that not a home run? I never understand that. So I know the catwalk
the ground rules
are, you know, you hit the right ring of the catwalk,
right,
and you get a home run.
It's unbelievable.
It is. It's unbelievable.
It's embarrassing. It is.
But they need to think about changing the rules, because that ball was projected based on launch angle, exit velocity. Mm-hmm. They have these abilities to track these things now. That would have been out of the ballpark.
Yeah, well, how about they just blow it up instead of change the rules?
That's a good point. Why is it? Why is it that baseball has not just said, you know what, Tampa Bay, you can't have a team anymore?
I have a theory about this, Beetle, and you know what it is?
What is it?
It's old people. That's what's going on down there. Their TV ratings are not bad, given how bad the team is, how little they put into it, and just what a dead-ass product and franchise that is. What they do have is old people who like baseball who do not go to the games.
And
what if they built a stadium like JetBlue Park?
1/4 of their schedule, Dan, is against the Red Sox and Yankees.
Yeah.
That's 40 games.
But seriously,
38 games right
there.
So
the local TV revenue, their market is way better than you would think. And that's what keeps them floating, as far as I'm concerned.
What are you doing playing indoors there? Like, why wouldn't you build...
It's so hot.
But seriously,
how hot can it be
at 7:30? Why are you playing in that particular building?
Yeah.
It's not about why are you playing indoors.
There should be no Major League Baseball
in the state.
What if they built a cool, smaller ballpark?
No.
You know, it doesn't seat a ton of people. 20,000 max, if that. Like 15,000 max.
That's minor league baseball. You know, I understand what you're saying, but...
But you know what I mean?
They should not be Major League Baseball in the state of Florida.
It's hard to watch it. It's hard to watch games on TV when games are played there.
Dismal, you know. Yeah, so there was like... Yeah, that kid hit his first home run. There was like 3 people out there scrambling around for the ball. It's like it wasn't a lot of competition.
Alex Cora did an appearance on Buster Only's podcast and told Buster that because Rafael Devers was chasing a lot of pitches in the last month, he said, this week I asked him, Rafi, what's your favorite restaurant? And so he told me, and I go, okay, let's make a deal. You give me X amount of money every time you chase a pitch out of the zone, and then I'll give you a gift certificate from your favorite restaurant if you walk or hit an opposite field home run. According to Cora, his bet with Devers paid instant dividends. That day we made the deal. He walked for the first time in like 3 weeks, and then he hit an opposite field home run the next day, Cora said, and then he walked the next day. So I found something that motivates him. He's motivating Rafael Devers with restaurant gift certificates.
That's very Tito.
And it's working.
Tito did stuff like
that. On top of that, there was a story and tweet out there yesterday that when reporters walked into the clubhouse in Tampa, Alex Cora was sitting there with Devers, Bogarts, and Nunez, and they were sitting in the clubhouse all together playing dominoes.
Sure.
And there was a reference. I remember, I don't know who had the tweet. I got to find it.
I think it was Ian Brown.
Is that who it was? Okay, yeah. So Ian Brown had the tweet, and Ian Brown said that's things that you would see that Terry Francona used to do.
Yes.
You know, the cribbage games with Dustin Pedroia.
Yep.
Right? Those legendary cribbage games they used to play.
Cora's only 42 years old. I mean, he was a teammate of Dustin Pedroia. He played against David Price. He's not that far removed from it.
He probably feels more like a player than he does.
Oh, yeah. Bench coach last year. Coach is always the guy that go-between with players. He's coming off that with Houston. You know, that was the one concern, one of the concerns, that he would be too close to the players. And that'll, if things don't go well, that will come out. In the meantime, it's great because now it's like working in their favor. Sure.
Andy put out one of those small fires last week with Carson Smith, and he basically put his foot down and said this guy's a clown.
He had a tough couple of weeks. We had to deal with the Price's, you know, stupid carpal tunnel, and then the Carson Smith disgrace that was. So, yeah, that was a bad – he was on the spot in both of those things.
But, I mean, just the attitude of the team seems to still be intact.
Yeah.
We're now almost into June. It doesn't feel like anything it for a couple of weeks, as we mentioned, it felt like things were not going great. And they've sort of changed direction here. I know they're trailing the Yankees by half game.
Well,
we've
identified all five playoff teams. I mean, it's the Angels, it's the Astros, it's the Indians, because that division's so bad.
Yep.
And then these two, and that's it. And so it's just go for it. Try to avoid the wild card game. See what you can do, and go from there. Because that's everybody else is racing to the bottom. There's no middle.
Dominic is in Marshfield on baseball in the state of Florida. Hey, Dominic.
Hey, what's up, guys? I just had a theory. I think it's a lot of it has to do with, like, the weather in Tampa, like how the lightning comes through that area.
And the thunder.
And they have to end up playing
the lightning.
How often, you know, they get the rainstorms and whatnot.
Yeah, it just speaks. That is to Zoe's point about why not build an outdoor thing, but why do they still have a team?
I just told you.
And Dan says,
I agree with Dan.
Local TV is not bad. And here's something tonight. Watch that crowd tonight, because the Lightning are playing Game 7. Kind of a big deal down there. So who's going to go out to the Trop to see David Price lugging it out there?
So he is pitching tonight.
Price is tonight. This is probably a game he wouldn't be dodging.
Chris in Plainville. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. Question.
Yeah.
Nunez, I don't think he's been all that great, personally.
Yeah.
Defensively, definitely not.
He's been a train wreck defensively.
Oh, God. But then I sit there and I think about Pedroia. I mean, obviously everyone's, you know, fan favorite. But, I mean, is he going to be – what do you think he's going to be able to do?
He's going to be your second baseman.
He's going to be able to do much.
Dustin Pedroia, he's your second baseman.
No, I know he is, but what do you think? Do you think he's going to be the old second baseman, or is he going to be washed?
No, I think he'll be okay. Defensively, so much better than Nunez. That's nobody's fault. Nunez, that's just not
Pedroia
what he is.
Yeah, Pedroia on one leg has got to be better than Nunez.
I mean, there's been stuff all year.
Somebody forgot how to play baseball?
No, I'm not so sure of the range. Without his range,
that's
fair. I'm not so sure he's going to be the defensive player.
Instincts and hustle alone will help make up for that.
Zoe's right. I mean, he knows how to position. He knows where to be. And you know, he'll come around. He'll be a significant upgrade defensively. Don't worry about that.
He may not be the same defender, though.
No.
He may not.
No.
But he's not going to be terrible.
God, no.
He's not going to boot balls the way that Nunez does. I mean, he's just not. I will say Nunez the other day had a flip with the glove.
Mm-hmm.
You see that?
It did not.
It was a little bit high. It took too long to get there. But it was, I thought it could have been disastrous, and it wasn't. Could have been bad. 617-779-0985, the telephone number for you.
What'd you make of last night? So Jimmy Stewart put out a tweet. Is Kimbrel hurt?
Well, he was off last night, and it was a very messy, you know, he came
just
in.
Just the way that was.
It made it interesting.
Yeah, he sure did. I mean, loading the bases against those bums.
Yeah, the kid pops up. He's trying to move the guy from second to third. Pops up, gets out, and then you get the pass ball. Now all of a sudden you get the wasted out. Guys are already on third. You get the sack. And next thing you know, the damn bases are loaded. You're thinking one swing here, and there goes your bullpen.
Yeah, the double down to right was Miller, I guess. That was a good one. And
he ripped the hell out of
that. Walked the next guy. So yeah, they kind of lucked out there. Tampa, for all their suckitude, I mean they've actually played the Sox hard. There's been a lot of close games, 1 and 2 run games with those guys.
And I mean, is this training with like lack of run support and Chris Sale starts? It's been a couple of those too.
Yeah, I mean he's 5-1. He should have more than that. He's pretty dependable. You know what you're getting every time out. It's been really good.
All right, coming up next, we're going to get back to the Celtics and tonight's Game 5 at the Garden. And that includes a report on the referees that will be on the floor in this game. The bad news is this. You will recognize some of these names.
Oh, boy.
These are not no-name refs.
I don't like how you tease that.
These are recognizable names, and that, in the NBA, typically means they're bad.
Loser's lament.
We also have pretty good information on what book LeBron was reading.
Okay, we've got both of those items for you. Coming back next, Brad Stevens joins us at 12:50.
Zolak and Bertrand.
It is no longer wise to ignore us.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Game 5 at the Garden tonight with the Celtics and the Cavaliers. LeBron James, before shoot-around, was reading a book
today. It's a studious.
Sitting in the stands, front row.
Smarter than all of us.
Courtside, reading a book. Hardy, you have information on that.
Yeah.
What was he reading?
You brought a couple books in, by the way, yourself today, pal.
I did. Well, I have, like, duplicates at home. We're into cleaning out the books.
Anything good?
So I have to, there's a Stephen King here that I think some might enjoy.
Fiction.
This is a book about Detroit by Charlie LaDuff, who I think Dan, you might like that one. And I have a Prince biography here too.
Pretty good. That any good?
It's all right.
The bio.
It's written by his wife.
Oh, yeah. It's garbage.
Yeah.
Written by Lisa. Or
no,
something.
No thanks.
All right. So Joe Giza.
Yeah, you know Joe Giza, WBZ TV producer.
I think he was the first one to figure this out.
He's an air guy now, too.
They do put him on air.
The book LeBron is reading is called The Alchemist, which kind of rings a bell.
Funny how you say alchemist instead of alchemist.
Yeah. Is it alchemist?
Alchemist.
I don't know.
Do you know what an alchemist is?
Yeah, someone who takes, in theory, lesser metals and can produce gold, right?
Yeah, but I think...
LeBron's trying to do with this roster?
Like, take a pile of junk and create the chicken salad out of chicken bleep.
Take a piece of coal, make a diamond.
In a spiritual sense, it's somebody who can transform the human soul. Okay?
I see it as a metaphor for the crappy players he has in his team.
Well,
try and make them into champions.
It was written like 30 years ago. It's by a Brazilian author. It didn't do very well at the time, but it's been much celebrated since then. I figured we could just read from the prologue here for a moment.
I'll wait for the movie.
The Alchemist picked up a book that someone in the caravan had bought. Leafing through the pages, he found a story about Narcissus.
Now we're getting close.
There we go.
The alchemist knew the legend of Narcissus, a youth who knelt daily beside a lake to contemplate his own beauty. He was so fascinated by himself that one morning he fell into the lake and drowned. At the spot where he fell, a flower was born, which was called the Narcissus. But this is not how the author of the book ended the story. He said that when Narcissus died, the goddess of the forest appeared and found the lake, which had been fresh water transformed into a lake of salty tears. "Why do you weep?" the goddess asked. "I weep for Narcissus," the lake replied.
I'd be out like one sentence.
I mean, is LeBron reading this? Book. Is LeBron reading this?
Zoe's never read a book as an adult.
You mean to tell? No wonder. Like, he was there for literally, 30 seconds flipping through the pages, and he put it down, pulled his pants up, said, "I'll start shooting now." Stretching. He just brought it out for the purpose of bringing it out like I got a book in my hand.
It's a good topic for him.
I weep for Narcissus, but I never noticed that Narcissus was beautiful. I weep because each time he knelt beside my banks, I could see in the depths of his eyes my own beauty reflected. This is a perfect story for LeBron.
It is perfect for him.
It's about. Do you want to know what it's about?
And you guys just took the bait, the both of you, by saying what you just said. This is perfect for LeBron.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he wanted you to say. Yep. He wanted you to look up his book. He wanted you to know what he was reading and for you to say, "Oh, this is really good."
Yeah,
good for him.
We're mocking him in doing so.
Because he is a narcissist.
No, because you're saying that by him reading it, there's going to be some level of self-growth there.
No. He just loves himself.
Oh, okay.
So he loves reading about
others. About a boy named Santiago who travels from his homeland in Spain to the Egyptian desert in search of a treasure buried near the pyramids.
Yeah. So this is what he wanted.
It was becoming darker and darker as the phases of the moon passed. They went on for a week, speaking only of the precautions they needed to follow in order to avoid the battles between the tribes.
I see pyramids.
The war continued, and at times the wind carried the sweet, sickly smell of blood.
That's what a book on tape sounds like. Is that what there's music in it?
That's what that one sounds like.
Oh, spoiler alert, he gets to the pyramids looking for the treasure. Turns out it was in the church where he had the epiphany to begin with. So he went all that way for nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what LeBron's reading. Here are your refs for tonight's game. I'm going to go with the guy that you probably don't know, and that's Jason Phillips. That's one of the three refs.
Yep.
Jason Phillips probably doesn't ring a bell. How about Ken Maurer? Kenny Maurer. Or Ed Malloy?
Eddie Malloy! Yeah!
Kenny Maurer is the guy that Tommy said, go home because nobody loves you here. Right? Wasn't that Kenny Maurer? Go home, Kenny. Was that who it was? No? Am I wrong on that, Dan?
It might be.
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know.
No.
I think it was Kenny Maurer. I think it was Kenny Maurer. Go home because nobody loves you here. I think that's who he told. Ken Maurer. Okay, now you want the ranking? The Homer scale, 1 through 71 of the 71 officials.
Yeah, please.
Home or road refs? one being the best home ref, 71 being the worst. Ken Maurer comes in at number 62 on the list. Ed Molloy is 64 on the list. Wow. And Jason Phillips is in the middle at 29.
No homers coming.
No homer real
no
advantage there.
Cooking.
Here's an odd trend that I've noticed between two of these refs, both Molloy and Maurer. The last six times the Celtics have had Ken Maurer reffing their game, they've gone to overtime, including their overtime win in Game 5 of the Bucks series.
It's good. Tight game. I like a tight game.
So you think that's a lot of games, six games in a row with that particular ref has gone to overtime. It's bested by Ed Molloy. The last seven Celtics games that Ed Molloy has reffed for the Celtics have gone to overtime.
That's amazing.
It really is. That's quite a trend.
It is.
And that's what you've got tonight. Those are your refs.
And don't give it one more thought. Just watch the game.
Okay, sounds like now, Celtics in a squeaker. Or Cavaliers, excuse me, in a squeaker.
Those two things would,
See, I would think...
Cavaliers in a squeaker.
I disagree there. I think where the game's being played tonight and how these kids respond in tight games, and they're usually at the Garden. They usually pull them out. I think a tight game that goes down to the wire favors the Celtics tonight.
By the way, this trend for these refs is not one-sided. Ed Molloy, the last five Cleveland games that he has reffed have gone to overtime. So, seven in a row he's done for the Celtics have gone to OT. Five in a row for Cleveland have gone to OT. For Jason Phillips, the guy you probably don't know, the last four with Cleveland have gone to overtime, and the last four with the Celtics have gone to overtime.
Sounds impossible.
It does sound impossible.
Really, these numbers just don't...
But it's true. And then you say, well, what about Ken Maurer? You gave us six in a row for the Celtics. Yeah. And five in a row for the Cavs have gone to overtime. That is an insane trend that appears out of these refs. That they have reffed that many games with these two teams, not head-to-head, just in general.
Yeah.
And their games consistently go to overtime. It jumped off the page at me when I was looking at recent games that these guys have done for both teams.
Zoe, do not ask Brad Stevens about this.
I'm looking at I'm going, this must be some sort of... I thought, Dan, I honestly thought it was a mistake. I'm like, this has got to be a mistake. No. That is a ridiculous trend with all three of these officials.
Anyone in any sport, it's crazy.
They all have streaks going with the two teams playing tonight of going to overtime. So does that mean we're destined for an overtime game in Game 5?
Well, we finally got a good game in the conference finals last night, first one. So maybe there'll be another one tonight.
Give me a break. This is hand-checking now, they're going to call. This Kenny Maurer should go home to his wife. Because nobody here loves him.
There it is. I was going to say, he took a shot at the
wife. Kenny Maurer.
Go home. Your wife.
You told Kenny Maurer to go home. I knew it was him.
Cook you some dinner.
Tommy's against him already. 617-779-0985. Pete's in Ohio. Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys. Hey.
Hey.
The trap. I thought it was built. I read somewhere that it was built for football.
It was built before they had a team, and we saw it grow up during spring training, but I'm not aware of that.
She's not built for football, right? The baseball stadium.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that.
Oddly shaped.
It's so round.
Yeah.
We would even suck for football anyways.
Yes.
But, I mean,
that's suck all around, right?
Yeah.
What's that like? The Alamo Dome. That's built for everything, right? Have you been to the Alamo Dome?
I have not.
Yeah.
The Astrodome was built for both.
Yeah. But you had a lot of space in there.
Yeah.
That thing was huge, man. I couldn't believe how big it was when we were down there for Super Bowl, the stuff that was used for. Just the size of it.
Yeah. I remember reading about this at some point, so I just looked it back up. When they built Tropicana Field, which was known, I think, as the Thunderdome at one point.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Florida Suncoast Dome and then the Thunderdome.
I remember the Suncoast.
They built this facility with Major League Baseball in mind, trying to attract a team, which blows my mind that they could have gotten it so wrong. And their first idea was that they did want to try and do an open-air stadium that had some sort of roof.
Mm-hmm.
So not a dome, not climate-controlled, but it was going to be covered. I'm trying to think. Seattle sort of has that, right? Safeco has a roof, but it's not closed.
Right.
Like, it's open. So if it's hot...
It's almost like the old Irving, Texas thing.
Right.
Like the hole.
Right. they still screwed this thing up royally. It's a disaster.
It's even ugly from the outside. Like, yeah, so you've seen
tilted,
it inside.
You know, yeah, it's
they almost got the Giants, right?
But oh, by
San Francisco
that
Giants?
In, that was in play at one point.
But oh, by,
because Barry Bonds was determining whether he wanted to re-sign there, right?
Oh, I don't remember that.
Because they were might be going to Tampa.
They almost left San Fran?
They were using it as leverage.
Okay. Well, here's what I would say about it, though. It's a disaster. I can't believe that they built this with that in mind. They got it right. They got their team. They got a team with that stadium.
They were in the World Series.
That's not on them. That's on baseball.
It was a World Series.
John and Canton has the real meaning of The Alchemist for us. Hardy, this is your call. This is for you. John.
Guys, I thought it might just be worth mentioning that I read The Alchemist, Hardy, going into my sophomore year of high school as a summer reading book. So definitely don't need that college education, Braun, to
Guy sounds like Reese. You sound like Reese.
Might just be worth mentioning. Thanks,
you do sound a little bit like Reese.
Yeah.
Canton guy,
I think
smart.
It was Reese calling in.
You know what?
Canton guy, smart.
Let's not automatically though discount books that we had to read in like middle school and high school though.
I mean, we probably skipped many of them anyway.
And you could pick up like when did you read To Kill a Mockingbird?
To Kill a Mockingbird was probably sophomore year of high school.
Go pick that up right now. You're not going to find a better novel.
Oh, great
I mean,
book.
You could read that. So you know, we won't automatically discount it. But no, he's. The image he wants to portray is one of, you know,
reminds
being
me
a
of,
scholar.
Reminds me of Reggie Jackson, who once said, I underestimated the magnitude of me.
He said that, huh?
Who would say that?
An egomaniac.
The magnitude of me.
What was the context of that quote?
Just how
they
big...
They asked him about striking out in the fourth inning.
Now, how big he became in New York, you know, because that was the breakthrough. He had been MVP. He played with the Orioles briefly. Then he went to New York... And he hit the three homers.
He became Mr. October.
Yes, yes.
In New York.
And it was a big deal. Back page of the tab every day. Every day.
The magnitude of me.
Kind of like that.
That's your guy. You and Reggie get along, don't you?
We do. I'll tell a story. It's a little off color. I think we can get through it.
Oh, yeah, no, please.
It's just, no, we were...
you ready, Jim?
It's just a thing in time, like how far back things go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember... Reggie had this, you know, really attractive blonde girlfriend, and the Yankees, we were in an airport, and there was a story on the cover of the New York Daily News, which said, Reggie is in favor of sperm banks, which, you know, like, that's how, you know, who wouldn't be, right?
Right.
But, I mean, but again, it's like the old days, it was a controversial topic, and Reggie came out in favor
test tube baby stuff.
Of sperm banks. And along comes Reggie with the girlfriend, and Greg Nettle says, oh, here comes Reggie with his banker.
Oh.
Was that okay?
That's funny. A good one.
Yeah.
Nettles was a funny guy.
Isn't that bad?
Oh, my God. Look at the old pictures of you in the dugout between them.
No, it's the picture with you and Reggie.
Was that the three-home run game?
Yeah, the three-home run game.
Yeah, that's on Yes all the time. People ask Reggie. A-Rod asked you about it. Everybody knows. You know, like
A-Rod asked you about it?
Yeah, he watches a lot of TV. Yeah, it was.
Well, A-Rod is... No, that's true. Remember that story with A-Rod and Jeter? And A-Rod went over to Jeter's apartment and
does everything.
Was like, where's the baseball package? Yeah. Why are the channels not working? And Jeter told him he didn't get it.
No, he says, Dan, is that you with Reggie in 1977? I'm like, yeah, that's 24-year-old me.
And then what does A-Rod follow up with? Oh.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Went and looked in the mirror again. You know, love A-Rod.
Love A-Rod.
I was like Forrest Gump that night. I was on TV forever.
You've been like Forrest Gump forever.
Yeah.
You understand that? You've got more things in your history that make you Forrest Gump. We have Brad Stevens coming up at 12:50, so that means we have to move up Dan's dates.
Oh,
we'll do them next.
Excellent. In the history.
Sports Hub headlines.
Game 5 tonight, TD Garden. Series tied at 2, Celtics-Cavaliers. Tip off right around 8:30. Grandy and Max will be along with the show starting at 8. Here on the Sports Hub, Rockets over the Warriors last night, 95-92. That series now tied at 2 games each. Red Sox over the Rays in Tampa, 4-2. Craig Kimbrell got into a bases-loaded jam in the ninth before getting out of it, picking up his 14th save. Alex Cora?
One of those nights, you know. Sometimes we get caught up on our guys and the pitch counts and, quote-unquote, they struggle, but you got to give credit to the opposition. And that about by Sucre right away, 3-2, fouled off a few and got that hit. Their approach is pretty good.
David Price gets the start in the second of the three-game set tonight. And NFL owners reportedly ready to approve a new national anthem policy requiring players to stand if they're on the field during the performance.
team can be fined if a player attempts to sit or kneel, but players will have the option of staying in the locker room during the anthem instead. Headlines are brought to you by Hooters in Saugus, Shrewsbury, Dedham, and West Springfield. Where the game is on, the food is hot, and the beer is cold. Hooters makes you happy. I'm Hardy on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub. More headlines in 30 minutes.
It's the joy of the hot dog.
Boom. Like, I win. Like, yeah.
But he has the ability to get skinny in the hole.
I know. I want to get it out.
Highly underrated piece of meat.
Beetle and Zell.
Sports Hub host for the most.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Damn it. I'm a Dapper Dan man.
And now it's time for Dapper Dan's Dates of Distinction.
If you're Dapper Dan.
We're moving up Dan's dates today on May the 23rd. We're going to talk to Brad Stevens coming up next segment. They had a game five tonight. Dan and I were just talking some old-timey baseball stuff off the air.
Mike Flynn liked your little joke there.
Here comes his banker.
The banker.
This is not May 23rd, but on July 2nd, 1963, did you know that Juan Marichal outdueled Warren Spahn? This is 63, Dan. Yes. How old was Spahn at that point?
He was like 42.
16 innings. He was 42. Juan Marichal was 25 at the time. Spahn was 17 years older than him.
He said, if he's not coming out, I'm not coming out.
What a great thing.
Can you imagine?
Sorry, that's just us.
That was like 0-0, too,
yeah.
Right? 0-0-1-1.
4 hours and 15 innings later, there they were, scoreless.
Duel. What a 15th. Duel, huh? It's one of the great duels of all time. Yeah, yeah. Don't ever forget that.
Yeah.
Okay, May 23rd right, is
let's
today.
Hear it.
Wow, it's already May 23rd, huh?
I know. On this date, I graduated from Holy Cross.
Whoa!
Yeah, thank you. And that's 43 years ago. How bad is that? Oof, that's bad. Okay, people who were born on this date. Joan Collins is 85 today. John Newcomb, a Hall of Fame tennis player, is 74.
Never heard of him.
How old do you guys think Marvelous Marvin Hagler is?
Ooh.
Whoa.
His birthday. 58.
He's 64, so he's holding up good.
He looks good.
Yeah, yep. Buck Showalter, who
marvelous.
Hates the Red Sox, is 62. God, he hates the Red Sox.
He's got to get over that thing.
I know. What about when he walked out to the mound when the guy was still around the bases last week?
He was so pissed off.
Yeah, it was great.
Pace of play.
How old do you think Drew Carey is today?
46.
No, 78. 54.
He is 60. Going to like you, Hardy.
Good. Great.
Yeah. Also, the great Mitch Albom is also 60 today. Tuesdays with Maury, among other hits. Hardy, you might know this. Radiohead drummer Phil Selway.
Radiohead!
You know? Well, he's 51.
I did not know the drummer from Radiohead's name.
How old do you think Jewel is today?
Ooh,
Jewel.
She's got to be 50.
She is 44. Not going to like you.
Yeah. She's only 44?
You know,
no, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just thought she was...
Wow. You know, she's related.
She's been around a long time.
She's daughter of those Alaskan people that are on the Frontier Alaska, reality show.
Hardy,
yeah, she's from
about?
Alaska.
Yeah.
Really?
She's got that gap in her teeth and her hips are sing better.
Boy, I did not know any of that.
My PJs and hop in the bed.
Yeah.
I feel alive, but I'm mostly dead. I got a big rack, but jacked up teeth.
Why does it like she and Michael Trey fix her teeth?
So
jacked up.
It's like the thing.
You know? She does.
You don't have money now.
So here's my question, though. How old was she when she became famous?
Young.
She had to have been.
Had to have been.
To only be 44 years old.
Yeah, there you go.
I think she probably broke when she was probably 23, 24.
Wow.
Okay, 20 years ago.
On this date, May 23rd, Reggie Cleveland was born. Anybody know who that is? He started one of the games in the World Series in 75, Red Sox pitcher. He once scattered 18 hits in a complete game. Try that, Beetle. 18-hit complete game. Other stuff from May 23rd. On May 23rd, Ben Franklin invented bifocals.
That's a big one.
Yes.
Yeah.
On May 23rd, in 1430, Joan of Arc was captured by the... Oof. It wasn't good. They sold her to the English. Yeah, it was bad.
What'd they do to her?
Wasn't good. She was a martyr. On May 23rd, in 19...
I know. I like to buy one of the orcs.
1934, Bonnie and Clyde were gunned down in Louisiana, ambush.
Cool.
Yep, that was the end of them.
I think like souvenir seekers tried to like cut off pieces of their bodies too.
Now,
like someone tried to get like a piece of Clyde's ear.
What the hell would be the point of that?
Well, it was a different time. It was a more innocent time.
So the film Bonnie and Clyde,
memorabilia big back then.
It was.
The film starred Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, and that's why they were on the stage at the Oscars when they screwed the whole thing up.
They completely butchered the entire.
They were Bonnie and Clyde. That's what they were doing up there together. Thank you. You didn't know that. Okay, our Third Reich mention of the day is from May 23rd, 1945. Nazi official Heinrich Himmler committed suicide by biting into a cyanide capsule while the British had him in Luxembourg. So that was that.
Okay.
On this date in 1964, Surgeon General C. Everett Koop issued a report saying there was a very solid evidence linking cigarette smoke to lung disease. 1984. They still hadn't, like, declared that.
It was still, the issue was still in doubt.
Still a little bit
remember, like,
ambiguity.
Marble Man was cool? Like,
sure,
cowboy bears.
Kidding? Yeah.
Cigarettes and horses.
On this date in 2013, the Boy Scouts of America threw open its ranks to gay scouts, but not to gay scout leaders.
Mm.
On this date, 1969, Hardy, The Who released Tommy.
Hell yeah, they did.
That's a big deal.
That's a big one.
Oh, I love that. Now we're talking. Yeah, he was ready with that.
First rock opera.
Ooh.
Ah. Greatest rock and roll band of all time.
Really?
The Who.
Yeah.
100%.
Wow. Two of them are dead.
Thank you.
Yeah. On this date, we have a...
I was supposed to see them.
Really?
The night after John Entwistle died. They were playing the joint at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas. And he died like a member of The Who should die. Hookers and blow. That's exactly how he went. He was hanging out in the Hard Rock. And went up to his room, and he had, you know, some company, and did a little tattoo, and a little, and checked out.
Had you already
they canceled the show.
Had you bought the ticket?
What we ended up doing was we went to L.A. instead and saw the first show that The Who played without John Entwistle at the Hollywood Bowl.
Did you get your money back on that other ticket?
They came back around. I can't remember what.
Because I know a woman who lives in Marshfield, and she had a ticket to see Elvis Presley on August 17th in Portland, Maine. 1977, and the king died on the 16th, and the show never happened.
Did she get her money back?
I don't know, but the tickets, I make her show the ticket every time I go over there.
Hell yeah.
You know, it's like
that's a good
big
one.
Thing. And the last thing I have for May 23rd, on this date, this is appropriate, on 1982, the Philadelphia 76ers defeated the Boston Celtics in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, 120-106. At the end of that game, knowing that the Sixers were going to go off and play the Lakers in the finals, and knowing the hatred of the Lakers, that's where Beat LA came from.
Nice.
On this date in 1980.
There's one baseball note that we have to mention.
What do you got?
It was on this date, 23 May, in the year of our Lord, 1883, a baseball game between... one-armed and one-legged players was played at Recreation Park, Philadelphia.
Woo!
The Snorkies...
Richard Kimball is the starting pitcher.
The Snorkies defeated the Hoppers 33-17.
Of course they were
this
the
isn't real.
Yeah.
This can't be real.
This is real.
What year was
the
it?
The one-legged team was called the Hoppers.
What year was it?
1883.
After the game, Ty Cobb beat up all the players after the game.
One of the guys called timeout. I got to go to the Hopper.
Give me that stump. I'm going to beat you to death with it. Come here, you. I'll give you for.
Hey, transfer your weight. Get your weight in there. Oh, you can't.
1883.
So are these
1983.
Take all your weight off your back foot. All your weight's on your back foot.
Are these like Civil War vets like years later? Yeah. What do we have here?
That would have been like almost 20 years after the Civil War.
So they'd be like
40.
Why
there were so many of them?
Think about it. They'd be like 40 years old.
I don't know if like one-limbed guys lived till into their 40s. Back in 1883.
Sounds like you had the plague runner yet.
A bunch of young guys without legs?
Literally,
what are we talking about here?
Sure.
Where was this game? Philadelphia?
Philadelphia.
Maybe this is how the Pirates were formed.
A lot of tripods in Philadelphia. Don't you worry about that.
We need to know more about this game.
The fans were booing both teams.
We need to know. The time a one-armed baseball team took on a one-legged baseball team.
What the hell?
So unfortunate that we have the head coach of the Boston Celtics joining us in 5 minutes. Otherwise, we could
have
two blind guys doing the play-by-play.
Really got to step aside here, Beetle.
Don't give up on us, Brad.
Gotta go.
Brad Stevens, head coach of the Celtics.
Thanks.
Making your job suck just a little bit less.
You think they have a big hole?
I think they have a big hole.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5.
105, the Sports Hub.
Well, 51 here on Zolak and Bertrand. Dan Shaughnessy, the Boston Globe, is with us, and now we welcome in the head coach of the Boston Celtics, Brad Stevens, joins us on Zolak and Bertrand. Hi, Brad.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. Last time we talked, you guys were up 2-0, and you're heading to Cleveland, and I'm not going to even ask you about Game 3, but Game 4 didn't start out too well. You guys responded well in Game 4. What do you take most out of what transition from Game 3 to 4 and how you can make some adjustments heading into this game early tonight?
Well, I thought the first 5 minutes, we were a little bit better, and then they went on a little 6-0 run there, and then they really ended the quarter. I think at one of the timeouts it was 16-10, and they ended the quarter on 34-17. And, the end of the first and the end of the third, we just didn't play well. We had some issues on the offensive end that I think helped them score the ball. We gave up 22 points in transition, which if you go back to games 1 and 2, that's one thing that we did great was we got back and we made them play against our set defense. And, it's never going to be perfect. You're always going to have to pick your poison when you're talking about these guys and the level that they have the ability to play at, specifically LeBron with his different things. But the one thing you can't do is you can't get beat in transition. And so we need to be much better with the ball, much better offensively. And then hopefully we can get back, set our defense, and make it as tough as possible.
Where do you think your issues are right now defensively? Much has been made of the switches that didn't work as well maybe in Cleveland as they did in the first two games. What would you like to do differently as a team?
Well, we've mixed in a bunch of different stuff, but the switches, for the most part, have been good. Obviously, there's going to be moments that you need to make sure that you try to avoid certain matchups. You try to make sure that you're mixing things up in and out of timeouts, et cetera. But ultimately, when we look at it, the transition are things that we can control, the offensive lack of execution, things that we can control. And then whether you switch or not, right, you're going to pick your poison. And if you double LeBron, he's going to find shooters. He's going to find Thompson rolling to the rim with the three shooters spaced around. If you quick show, he's going to quickly get out of it. And he's either going to make a play or he's going to have, again, the shooters hanging around. So there's all kinds of issues with any coverage with LeBron, and that's why you can't give him those transition baskets. The thing that I would say that people – probably don't talk enough about is how good he's gotten shooting the basketball over the years. And that's really taken out an option to go under, which probably, 3-4 years ago was a primary option for a lot of teams.
Brad, Dan Shaughnessy here. I was in Cleveland with you guys, and it seemed from where I was that they were trying to ultimately end up with LeBron backing in against Terry Rozier. Is that something that you think that they're trying to do and something you guys can avoid?
Well, there's going to be times, again, where it depends on where on the floor, right? So, like, if he's in the middle of the floor and he gets that switch and Terry can force him into some of those contested deep fadeaways from 17 feet, he's great at those against anyone. And at the same time, from an efficiency standpoint, you'd much prefer that to an open catch-and-shoot three or a shot at the rim. Mm-hmm. If it's down on the block and it's on an empty side of the floor, then those are things that we've really got to address and make sure that we try to cover as much as possible. But, he was on him some in games 1, game 2, game 3, game 4. There's going to be times where switching feels worse than it actually is when you go back and look at the numbers. And, I think that that's, again, why you just have to make them play against our set defense. If we can get back, there's going to be times where he makes great plays. You just can't give up the easy ones to their team. That's the bottom line.
Coach, I know you spoke earlier on Larkin. His availability, has that changed? Can you update on that for tonight's game?
No change as of right now. No change as of right now. He went through a little bit of the non-contact portion of shoot-around. But I don't anticipate him being available tonight I never thought he was coming back in this series, but it's still not you know, not 100%.
But it sounds like there's some progress being made there, even if he's not playing tonight.
No question. He's making progress, that's for sure.
We're talking with Celtics head coach Brad Stevens. Game 5 happening tonight. Do you sense any panic or extra pressure with your team right now, or are they kind of taking this all in stride, just focusing on tonight's game?
Well, I think you're always going to, you know, that's always something where your emotions will be high. These guys are passionate about what they do. They want to do really well, and I think it's our job to talk about what we have to do on each possession and, you know, not overreact when something doesn't go our way. You know, I think that that's one of the things that, you know, you talk about specifically the switches. If LeBron backed in Terry three times over the course of the game, you know, but it saved us from missing their shooters because we weren't running around all over the place. And it saved us points on the other end, then we're in pretty good shape. We just have to kind of stay the course. If we get down, we can't try to hit home runs on offense. You know, we just have to keep hitting singles and do things that you have to do to kind of maintain, you know, weathering a storm as they're going a little bit. And we did that so well in Game 2 specifically. We didn't do it as well in Game 3. Game 4. Game 3, we just got blasted. But Game 4, I thought we were really good at times, but I thought we just tried to hit too many home runs.
Well, and in Game 4, I mean, unlike 3, you played well at the beginning until the middle of the first quarter and then kind of went away.
Right.
It feels like, how do you prevent from playing from behind, which you had to do the whole game in both of those games?
Yeah, that's a great question, and they've done it different ways, right? So it's really the last three games, Dan. So it's, you know, LeBron goes nuts in Game 2 and scores 21 in the first quarter, and we're double digits behind. Game 3 and 4, you know, George Hill comes out and does what he does, and LeBron is playing more of a facilitator role and only takes 12 shots the entire night. And then Game, you know, 4 was a mixture of everything, but, you know, again, you know, it was really in the first quarter what got away from us was probably bad offense leading the transition.
Yeah.
And if we can just avoid those moments to the best of our ability, then we'll give ourselves a better chance to, again, weather a storm so that you're not down 17 when they're playing great. You're down 5 or 6, and then you make your run. It's a lot more manageable.
Coach, how about for you personally? I mean, there's been a lot of talk that this is a big game for you, maybe the biggest as head coach of this basketball team. How do you balance that?
I have a blast. I'm coaching basketball. Are you kidding me? Like, this is... I realize what a joke it is that I get to do this for a living. You know, I'm looking forward to the challenge. We're getting a chance to play and compete against the best player of this generation and guys that have been there, done that on a championship stage for them. Like, Kevin Love's a good player. Kyle Korver's a good player. J.R. Smith's a good player. They're getting contributions from a lot of guys. George Hill, go down the line. Like, this is a great challenge, and I want our guys to have fun. You know, I think one of the things, the longer you're in it, and I haven't been in it, I guess, as long as, you know, a lot of other people, but the longer I've been in it, the more I've just come to appreciate the opportunities. And, you know, I'm not losing sleep over things I can't control. You just go after it. Go after it and compete.
Do you think this is the biggest game you've ever coached in the NBA tonight? This it?
I think every game's the biggest game. I don't look at any game any different, to be honest. I mean, obviously, when you're talking about game sevens of series or games where you've already lost three, like, your season's over if you lose those. But I think games in November, like, as I'm getting ready, it's the most important thing I've ever done is coach that game. And it's no different tonight, but that'll be no different in game 6. And then, you know, we'll see where we end after that.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the some of the videos going around. LeBron's reading now, too, again. The Alchemist was reading that before shoot around. Does that mess with your mind a little bit? I don't know what tactics he's using, but at SOB, I tell you what, boy.
I will say this. I talked about his shooting and the improvement in his shooting, and it has really taken going under pick and rolls away as an option over time. He is as smart of a basketball player as I've ever seen, and he deserves kudos for that. He's a heck of a player, and that's what makes this challenge fun.
Your lineup remain the same tonight?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
You know what's funny is I get asked about that.
Every day.
Sometimes you're really contemplating it, and sometimes you're not. But I guess as long as we're talking about it, I think we're in contemplation stage is the way that we
What time do you figure that out?
Do what's best for the team.
Yeah, what time do you arrive
at the... He knows, he's just not telling you.
What time do you arrive at the conclusion?
What time do I figure it out, or what time do I announce it?
Yeah. What time do you figure it out? 3 hours ago.
It all depends on like what percentage of contemplation we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
99.99% sure.
Yeah.
No, I think we've got it pretty figured out. It's just a matter of when we announce certain things.
We promised our friends on Toucher and Rich here on 98.5 The Sports Hub that we would ask you about this. Rich Shurtenlieb told us this morning that he heard that your neighbor broke his wrist last summer. Is that true?
My neighbor,
Medical guy broke his wrist.
He had an injury to his wrist of some sort, and that required you to then mow his lawn for the duration of the summer.
Absolutely not true.
It was a great story.
It was so much better.
It was a great story. We should have never asked you.
I know it's wrong, and that's why I didn't want to ask it. I knew it.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
Fake news.
I might be contemplating our lineup and not announcing it, but I'm not going to tell a lie on going.
Okay, well,
all right, good job.
Let's pose it this way to get the story back to being a good story. If your neighbor had broken his wrist and he needed some help with his landscaping, would you offer to cut his grass all summer for him?
For sure. Yeah.
Might as well be true.
Brad Stevens, good guy.
Indiana kid.
When I was 15 and 16 and doing lawn mowing as a summer job, I just tried to get it over with as soon as possible. Now, whenever you get a chance to do it, take a deep breath and enjoy it.
Oh, I hear you. I was out there for 45 minutes this morning. It could have taken me 15. I'm right there with
you.
All right, Brad. Good luck tonight.
Good luck tonight.
All right, guys. Have a great night. We'll see you. Bye.
Brad Stevens. Damn. Story wasn't true.
But we still did get Thanksgiving dessert. I mean,
that's coming too.
Oh, the Stevens family, good people. Yeah.
The Stevens family Thanksgiving dessert is a true story that happened here.
Oh, yeah.
And the kicker of it is that it was indicated to us and requested and actually demanded that the dish come back, which makes it all the more
real. I don't
think
it was demanded. We made sure to get it back.
Make sure you bring that Pyrex back.
It's pure Americans.
Just like the rest of us, if you brought in a Pyrex casserole dish of something,
you would want it back.
Would your wife ask for it back?
Oh, yeah.
Would you want it back, too?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know what? Yes. They probably dig the 4th of July, too. Probably have nice picnic out back, red and white checks, unlike this guy.
It's like Us Magazine stars. They're just like us. Just like us. Want that Pyrex back.
Sparklers. Hey, kids, here. Wave them around. Just watch. Don't get it in your eye.
Man who enjoys cutting his own grass. That's what he said. It's nice to get a chance to cut your own grass.
And something about basketball, I forget. But it was the grass stuff.
It was the grass stuff that really stuck today, though.
I like it, too. It's the one job I really, really like doing. Household-wise.
Dan, thanks for being here.
Next week, fellas.
See you, Dan. Your time.
There he goes.
And then just like that, he's gone.
This is like me at school, man.
He gave us
second teacher said, hey, we'll see you
next week. I thought we were done.
You're like me leaving the class, man.
Last week, we're done.
Bye.
I forget what we were singing last week, but he got up and left in the middle of it. It was even more unceremonious than that exit.
Neville Brothers.
It was Neville Brothers. Aaron Neville.
Everybody was singing.
Neville Brothers. Hardy has headlines. 1 o'clock hour on the way.